big spender. Looking at the Biden budget announcement from last week, expanding the social safety net, but Medicare and student debt still not on the table. Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us each week wherever you find good podcasts at US Event, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. And check out the new podcast as well, Pacific Conversations. Some great chats up already. And next week, former Foreign Minister Bob Carr is our guest. We covered quite a bit on the Biden budget last week, but this was prior to the figures actually being released. We're looking at $6 trillion, not $4 trillion. Lots of spending on infrastructure and education. And it's being called the most substantial expansion of the federal government's spending powers since World War II. Ed, what's new? What more do we know?
Well, let's get this right here. The reason these expenditures are so large, it is like World War II. If you look at it, the amount of crippling of the U.S., European, and other economies was equivalent to the last war. The other thing that's equivalent is U.S. industries at the beginning of the Second World War were second rate. They were not the best in the world. Fords were only sold in America, and the people that bought them were scared to death that they would drive properly. So this is the chance for the United States to reestablish itself economically, socially, especially. This is the biggest social justice budget ever in the history of the United States. And of course, Biden is hoping political corrections and improvements will follow on from this. People, when they're happy, are very far to the left. And when they're mad, they're very far to the right. Mm-hmm. And you see that all over the world. Look what's happening in Europe right now. Right-wing governments, and France in particular, are gaining enormous strength because as countries weaken, people go after one another. And that's what's happening in the United States.
In terms of that social safety net, though, we haven't seen healthcare tackled in this budget. No mention of public options for healthcare or an expansion to Medicare.
No, we haven't. And the other one we haven't seen anything about is student debt. I'm not certain why not, but they may be bridges too far. Those things are in abeyance right now. And to move that distance might hurt in the midterms. So Biden has a lot of tricks up his sleeve. You know, when you get a little older, you learn how to play the game a little bit better. And I think he's playing a game where he doesn't lose too many Republicans and he gains all the Democrats. But his biggest moves are on the social justice front. And hopefully this summer will be warm, green, and without fires. And the only thing that will be on fire is the American economy steaming ahead.
What about the argument around military spending? Look, as you say, I think Democrats, progressives are largely pretty happy with Biden's performance, but they are still saying this budget spends too much on military, while Republicans naturally say it doesn't spend enough. Where's the money sort of even going at this point?
Military spending is going to the Veterans Administration to take care of all of our young men and women who've been injured, lost limbs, and lost hope in all the wars we fought over my lifetime. So reducing military spending or keeping it the same, because you'd have to really pump it up an awful lot to counter what's going on in China and the Soviet Union and other adversaries around the world. So Biden is hoping that diplomacy will be a big part of the budget and military spending will be a smarter and better way to spend the money. And the other area in which we haven't noticed very much is spending far more money on nations that are in distress, like Central America. So I think Biden says it's better to heal with the economy, even though there may be some theft involved, than healing with American soldiers, where the only thing we get is a bad name.
And just before we do move off this, Biden has met this week with Republicans' top infrastructure negotiator, Senator Shelley Moore Capito, to see if bipartisan compromises can be met. But a lot of Democrats have nothing to give. The writing is on the wall. Republicans believe their best strategy is to oppose everything Biden tries to do, and then when midterms roll around, complain he didn't get anything done. Do you think there's anything valuable to come out of this week's negotiations, Ed?
I think the fact that these negotiations are going on at this late date and this time is a bit promising, which means there's some movement among the Republicans, knowing there's a lose-lose here. If things are done, the Democrats and Republicans out there as voters will vote for what's done. People are not going to vote at this juncture for what isn't done. For the Republicans to go out on the stump and say, I didn't give you any health care. I helped close your schools. I didn't allow your hospitals to be open or your roads to be fixed. Doesn't sound like a real good campaign to me. Or I am afraid of debt. Every American's in debt up their eyeballs. They say the government should be in debt with me.
Look, Democrats likely to go it alone on a lot of measures. Speaking of which, the vote on an independent commission into the treasonous events of January 6 has failed. Six Republicans joining with Democrats and voting to bring this one to debate, but failing to, of course, reach the two-thirds majority. Ed, where to now?
This is what I would do if I were president, and I'm still seeking that opportunity. I'd say the houses can't agree, but I have the authority to set up a commission to investigate any matter that affects the security of the United States. So I am, like the Social Security Commission, set up this commission with that end in mind. But I wouldn't call it the January 6th Commission. I would call it something like a commission to ensure the continuation of our democracy. And anything that would harm the progress of that in January 6th will be the biggest feature, will be in this commission's remit. The Congress cannot stop such a thing. And some Republicans, I probably named five of the six, put them on the commission. Maybe even have more Republicans on it than Democrats, particularly people who served in previous administrations. That's the move I would make. So it doesn't look like the House of Representatives is carrying this can.
This has again raised the specter of the fight over the filibuster, though, with Republicans staging their first filibuster since Biden took office to block the commission. Unless rules change, I suspect it won't be their last, but with the likes of Joe Manchin holding a deciding vote, will we continue to see no action on the filibuster?
I don't think we need to see any action on the filibuster. I think what we need to see is Manchin voting yes on the next two very big bills, the one on infrastructure and the families bill. If he does that, and remember, they've got one more that they can do, yet unnamed, who cares about the filibuster?
And on top of the budget this week, Biden has rolled back Trump's permissions for oil and gas leases in Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, as it reviews the environmental impacts of drilling in the region. Look, it seems cartoonish that these leases were offered in the first place, and it should come as no great surprise that Biden has reversed them. But where to from here, Ed?
Nowhere. End of story. This story will not be next week's news. Remember, the environmental organizations that are blocking this are a circle of virtue. The environmentalists, the Inuits, the native peoples of that area, plus the native people of Canada, plus the Canadian left, can't get much better than that. Circle of angels.
And the fight over voting rights in Texas, outnumbered Democrats have staged a walkout to keep a sweeping new bill full of voting restrictions from passing. The bill would have created new limitations on early voting hours, voting by mail, and local voting options like drive-through voting, which Dems argued would make it harder for non-whites for voting in Texas. Now, this is all well and good this time, Ed, but Republicans aren't going to give up at one bite of the apple. Where does it go from here?
I still have this feeling that this is kind of like a situation of Don Quixote. The windmills aren't fair, guys. This is the 21st century. Blacks will figure out how to use the new rules, and whites will think they're not using them, and blacks and Hispanics will prevail. Nothing's going to get Hispanics and blacks out more than someone trying to keep them from voting. And in what district are you going to run where you're saying, I'm trying to keep people from voting? I think this is so desperate. There's a new book out called The Fragility of the White Man. And this is exemplary about this fragility, that somehow, as a white man, I'm going to be skewered, died, etc., for my sins. And maybe there's so many sins out there, you better be afraid.
Well, we're going to be talking about one of those sins to close out the show, in fact. But before we get there, the Klamath Basin along the California-Oregon border is facing a historic drought, with lakes drying up and farmers cut off from water supplies they've relied on since 1907. Now, I remember reading something last year that detailed how some of these water supply issues might work in California, Nevada, surrounding states, whereas climate change worsens the states further up the line in terms of where the water originates might just turn off the tap. Ed, what do you make of this one?
This is something that's been slow in coming, but now climate change is real. I went to the University of Oregon my first year, and I didn't know it could rain so much. Mm-hmm. That Klamath Valley is just so green, it's hard to believe. It's great wine country, it's great wood country, it's great fishing country. And things are changing. And changing public policy to deal with them is going to be very hard, because almost anything you do is going to be the wrong thing. I hope our leaders here in Australia are looking at this, because, as you know, this is all based on the Japanese currents. And when the Japanese currents are wet here, they're dry in the United States and along the Washington-Oregon coast. We will have a dry spell coming that'll do the same thing here in Australia. And meanwhile, there'll be so much water in the West, they won't know what to do with it, and floods and the like. So nature is taking a revenge.
China has been asserting itself more and more over Taiwan, with this week American actor John Cena forced to make a grovelling apology to China, fearing that to do otherwise would cut significantly into his box office returns for the latest film, Fast and Furious 9. This was after he told a Taiwanese broadcaster, Taiwan is the first country that can watch F9. Ed, we see China asserting itself aggressively on these territorial issues. Are more public figures going to have to start walking on eggshells?
Oh, the NBA did, remember? Mm. National Basketball Association had to walk on eggshells because while people are watching basketball in the U.S. in big numbers, the numbers aren't nearly as big as in China. And the best payrolls for a basketball player are in China. So the Chinese have the largest middle class in the world, and it's still growing. They can internally consume now for the first time, so they can stick their thumbs up people's noses. They are exporting films now. There's so many Chinese living around the world that they can export films. So I think this is them, like, you know, the kind of reminds me of my grandchildren. They're learning how to walk and talk, so they'll kick down the door. Let's hope they don't use any of their military power, because they haven't.
And Israel, could we finally have a solution to the longstanding political chaos within the country? A coalition of strange bedfellows seems to have finally struck a deal to form a majority that would oust embattled incumbent Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Ed, what's going on?
Well, how long have we been talking about this?
Too long.
This is the fifth election, and all of them have been aimed at the same thing, ousting Netanyahu. They may have got him now. I think the two reasons he's on his way out are this most recent war that did so much political damage to Israel, and his own prosecutions for corruption. As you know, if you were in a candy store and one kid steals some candy, you don't chase him down the street. You wait till several kids do that and you move the candy. In this case, he stole the candy and they're chasing him down. And I think that for him to come back is going to be very difficult. He will be the leader of the minority party, and there'll be fights within that party because people are going to be trying to succeed him. This will be interesting times. Maybe the two-state solution has at least one leg.
Mm. And remembrances this week for the 100-year anniversary of the oft-forgotten Tulsa Massacre. Until recently, this event was rarely taught, but I do think it's emblematic of race relations in the United States. Black folks got together, they built something for themselves in a time they were locked out of white society, Black Wall Street, as it was known. White folks saw the blacks had it too good as far as they were concerned, and they murdered and looted. The looting, I think, is a really important aspect of this, and they burned the place to the ground, then spent the next 100 years saying to black people, hey, why don't you guys fix up your own communities instead of complaining? Look, Ed, you're not quite old enough to have been around for this one, but any thoughts?
Yeah, I just missed it.
Mm.
No, this is a story that I learned about as a youngster from members of my own family, but I couldn't really believe it. And later on, I saw bits of it in history and history books and photography of it. But Tulsa wasn't the only place. The same thing happened in Virginia. The same thing happened in Tennessee. Whenever blacks got to be too big, the whites moved in, took away their voting powers or whatever to limit their capacities. The only thing I can say about this now is, again, as I said earlier, it can be a rallying cry this time for blacks to do more for themselves, with themselves, and with others to raise the economic plight of African Americans. African Americans' economic situations have improved, but not as much as they need to pull in all those who are still in poverty. the recent budget will do a lot in that regard, because it'll provide a social, health, and physical food base for every child in America. That will help a lot of Black children. And with jobs coming, if Black men are in work, that will be the salvation of Blacks around the country. Work is good medicine.
Ed and I will be back next week to talk all the latest from the land of the free and the home of the brave. Check us out on Facebook and Twitter, US of Ed, wherever you find good podcasts as well. And the new podcast, Pacific Conversations. Check that one out. The website is edtalks.com.au.